Chapter 2. The Pride of the Emperor. There was always a moment of enlightenment for Gilliman during teleportation, when he hung in a state that was neither life nor death. In those moments, when his soul straddled two worlds, he knew himself for what he truly was, not a being of matter alone, but a creature of both realities. And in those moments, he was convinced, no, he knew, that he was spun from warp stuff and matter both. Though the feeling faded and became absurd after his deliverance to his destination, at the time it was profound, as if an understanding of the mysteries of creation awaited his discovery if he had but the courage to accept his nature and look a little deeper. He had the courage, but he never looked. Damnation lay that way. Temptation passed. The sense of enlightenment fled. A blaze of light delivered him and his warriors back into ignorance and to their target. The afterlight was slow in dispersing, putting them at risk of attack while they were half blind. Gilliman tensed, ready to fight, but no challenge came. Greasy wisps of warp energy contorted themselves out of existence, leaving the boarding party in darkness. It was darker than a terrestrial night, but systems in his helmet aided his superior eyes in creating a grainy image of the void ship's interior. For a second, Gilliman thought himself lost, cast into the Empyrean itself. He looked upon a scene drawn from lonely nightmare. In the centuries since the end of the heresy, Gilliman had fought demons, he had trodden the surface of worlds changed by the unclean touch of chaos. He had seen through windows of flesh, conjured by sorcerers into depthless dimensions of evil. The interior of the Pride of the Emperor was of similar ilk. As intended, the boarding party had emerged within the Triumphal Way, the great corridor running the length of the Pride of the Emperor. Once the massed chapters of the legions had marched its length in celebration of Fulgrim's victories for the Imperium, but those days were lifetimes dead, and the derelict avenue was empty. The warriors of Ultramar were a lonely island of blue. Gilliman's Invictara suzerains scanned their surroundings, shields and legatine power axes held in anticipation of an attack that did not come. Handheld auspexes whined and chimed out the all-clear. Lamps stabbed out from suit mountings, their pools of bright illumination dancing over vile shapes. Thiel was first to break the silence. "The Triumphal Way," he said. "It has changed."
"A century of years is more than enough time for evil to do its work," said Gilliman. "The Emperor's children have fallen far," said Andros.
Cogitator systems built into the armor of reason highlighted points of interest and threat for Gilliman automatically. He examined them all cursorily. The Primarch's engineered brain was capable of processing a phenomenal amount of information. That had always been his special talent. He listened in to the battle chatter of the fleets and the quiet order exchanges of his squads as they spread out. He scanned the frequencies for notification from his other strike teams, all while he examined the avenue and read multiple data screed readouts scrolling down his faceplate display with equal attentiveness. He formulated plans, gave brief orders via Vox and Databurst, but it was the ship that absorbed him most. The Triumphal Way had changed beyond all recognition. Where once was splendor, darkness held court. The little light that the Ultramarines brought was swallowed quickly, reduced to a dismal silver that took the edges from everything, smearing all features into an uncertain blur where distance was difficult to judge and the darkest areas could prove to be anything but shadows. The Primarch remembered the Triumphal Way as it had been, when it was a showcase for all that was fine in human art. Gone were the bronze heroic statues that had lined its broad path, as were the masterpieces painted by the artists of the 28th Expeditionary Fleet that had hung between them. In their stead were hideous abominations, contorted sculptures of a shocking nature, and artworks that depicted the profane and the obscene. The latter had been rendered in pigments derived from unclean fluids, which, left alone, had sprouted thick mats of mould. No attempt had been made to place these new adornments carefully, or to clear away the old. Shattered frames were heaped like driftwood. The bronze scrap was scattered across floors, obscured by a clotting of filth. The marble cladding of the walls was pitted all over, and black liquid oozed sluggishly from wide cracks. Onyx columns had been wrenched from their settings and lay broken, the engraved list of past victories on them reduced to a jumble of letters. The paving was shattered in many places, and where the metal of the deck should have been visible, there were only black, watchful pits. Worst of all was the silence. Sound was unnaturally muted. Battle raged outside, and the ship was under heavy bombardment, but unlike the gauntlet of power whose halls rang to explosions and the howls of overworked machines, the pride of the Emperor did little but shiver from time to time, like a giant stirring in its sleep. No light flashed through the high armor glass windows at the avenue's apex. Only darkness was visible. Discordant music drifted from somewhere. Three screams issued from another direction, shockingly close. Gilliman had seen more overt horrors wrought by the minions of chaos, often on a stupefying scale, but there was a pregnant doom to the triumphal way that overtook even the goriest displays and unsettled his mind.
"Be on your guard," he said. "Things are not as they seem. The pride of the Emperor no longer wholly occupies real space."
"Yes," voxed Thiel. "This place stinks of the warp." A space marine's mind is robust, altered during his apotheosis from human to superhuman, and hardened against fear by years of training. Gilliman's veterans had seen much of what their Primarch had, and took the disquiet in their stride. They arrayed themselves for battle, shield-bearing breacher teams taking up station near ingress points, Terminators forming up into squads, his own Invictaris suzerain honor guard taking up position to maximize the protection their slab shields could provide their lord. The disruption fields around their axes shone palely in the gloom. Gilliman set his vox to encrypted wideband.
"We have arrived. Task forces, inform me of your status."
Garbled static laced with laughter and screaming burst into his ear. Half a minute went by before a voice resolved itself painfully from the cacophony.
"My lord, Primarch, can you hear me?" "I have contact with you, Master Ludon," said Gilliman. "I have been attempting to reach you for several minutes, my lord. The Aurora chapter stands firm. We are meeting minimal resistance. There are..."
The chapter master's voice blurred out for a moment, replaced by wild shrieks.
"Only 14, mostly bodies, all of them mutilated. We are proceeding towards our objective." "Strike group wrath, my lord," said another voice.
A rune blinked in Gilliman's display, marking out a position on his cartograph 20 decks below. The report came with a background of banging bolters and the roaring sound of atmosphere flash heated by melter weapons.
"Master Corvo," said Gilliman with a smile. There were too few veterans left from the times before. "The Nova Marines are engaged on three fronts, my lord," the chapter master shouted. "Enemy numbers are higher than expected. Estimated arrival at target zone 12 minutes after intention." "Keep me informed," said Gilliman.
His own group remained unharried. He switched through to the other task forces. All but that of the Aurora chapter had been engaged by large numbers of the enemy. There were Empress children everywhere, but not on the triumphal way.
"Advance,"
Gilliman ordered. His guard broke into a swift stride as he set out, heading into the night that had hold of the pride of the Emperor.
"We will meet no enemy here. We cannot be undetected. This is another trap," said Andros. "My brother is challenging me," said Gilliman. "Fulgrim always was too enamored of theatrics." "We must be on guard for ambush," said Andros. "Do not expect it, brother," said Thiel. "This dismal corridor would not suit Fulgrim. Where else would he be but on his greatest stage? We will find him in the Heliopolis."
Combat reports came through with relentless efficiency. Gilliman cycled through each of his sub-commander's direct vox feeds one after the other. The pride of the Emperor continued to shiver minimally from the bombardment it suffered from Gilliman's fleet. Reports from the Gauntlet of Power said their foe was taking heavy damage, but there was scant evidence of any of that inside Fulgrim's ship. The two ships had passed each other, their escorts fighting rapid duels to clear the way for the two flagships to lumber about and make another pass. Lesser ships succumbed to concentrated firepower as other vessels lent their might to the struggle. Gilliman's fleet was fighting well, but it was heavily outnumbered. He did not have much time. The second and first companies ascended stairs as tall as hills. The atmosphere became cloying with the sense of sweat and perfume and blood. An overpowering musk that derived from no mundane body penetrated the Space Marine's respirator grills, though they had sealed them tightly enough to defy hard vacuum. The last time Rabute Gilliman had walked the triumphal way, it had been as an honoured guest. The Emperor's children had lined the stairs and landings in their hundreds, and bright light had sparked from their artistry as they saluted him. His brother had greeted him warmly. Gilliman felt a pang of sadness for what might have been. Now, in the murk, he returned like a thief in the night. The atrium to the Heliopolis emerged suddenly from the unnatural dark. From its rear, the Phoenix Gate came at them like an ogre striding out of its cave in challenge. Gilliman had his men halt and spread out. The reports from the other strike groups crackled in his helmet, interrupted by hellish screams and moans as, with sorrowful eyes, Gilliman took in what Fulgrim had done to the Phoenix Gate. In the days before the war, the Phoenix Gate had been a masterpiece of the sculptor's art. Together, the closed bronze gates had depicted the crowning moment of Fulgrim's life. The Emperor still stood there, holding out the Palatine Aquila to Fulgrim, whose figure also remained. The giving of this honour was the ultimate display of respect from their father, and the gate had been a reciprocal show of devotion from his son. Behind the two figures, a crowd looked worshipfully on. In all other respects, the gate had changed. The rich artwork was much abused. All over, the soft bronze had been cut artlessly with profane symbols. The figures behind the two principal actors had been reworked into cavorting, lewd things of unnatural origin. The work was of variable quality. Some of it was executed with skill, other parts crude, and its inconsistency destroyed the careful illusion of depth its original sculptor had created. Originally, the lesser figures had subtly drawn the eye to the principal actors of the piece. Now these background characters clamoured for the eye's attention, overwhelming the Emperor and his son. Only Fulgrim's legion had been permitted to display the personal symbol of the Emperor. The irony of the honour weighed heavily on Gilliman's heart. Fulgrim had been pompous, vainglorious, boastful and proud, but his better qualities had outshone these foibles. Examining the wreck of the door's art hardened Gilliman's heart. The Aquila's eyes had been hacked out. The head of the Emperor had been gouged from the relief and replaced with a mess of bones lashed together with blackened sinew. Fulgrim's face was now a moving mask of silver which shifted almost imperceptibly through a range of expressions, all of which were hateful variations on sneering arrogance. His body, too, had been changed, made multi-limbed and serpentine in a manner that suggested it had always been this way. It depicted him as a savage god, rich with potency, though it could not match the truth of his new form.
"He will be within, waiting," said Gilliman, running his gaze over the vandalism one more time.
He turned from the gates to address Thiel and Andros.
"Await me here."
"My lord," said Thiel, "he undoubtedly is waiting for you. That is his way. All this showmanship appears childish, but he is dangerous. I remember how he was. By entering, you are playing into his hands. We should not play his petty games. We should go on in force and slay him."
"I go alone," said Gilliman firmly. "If we attack en masse, he will respond in kind, and we will be driven back or destroyed before our brothers can complete their tasks. Let me occupy him. His arrogance will demand he gloat a while. While he is engaged in pointless display, his attention is away from the others, and we will have the opportunity to disable the ship.
He will want to fight you, said Thiel.
He will, agreed Gilliman. He may ambush you, said Andros. That is unlikely, said Gilliman. He will want to prove he is better by feat of arms. He will kill you, my lord. Do not do this, said Thiel.
Gilliman stared back, his expression hidden by the muzzle of his helmet.
I must fight him.
Do you truly believe you can beat him? Asked Thiel.
I do not know, answered Gilliman after a pause.
Thiel looked away and sighed. His helm rendered it as a growl.
I fear there is more to your desire to face your brother than practicality, my lord.
What do you mean by that?
The ship trembled as a heavy hit burst its way inwards, perturbing the unnatural serenity of the craft.
Pride doomed your brother, said Thiel simply. Pride undoes the mightiest. Do not be proud, my lord.
Are you not proud, my son?
I am proud, said Thiel, to be ultramarine, to have you as my gene-sire, to have fought with you for so long. But I am not proud enough to let it kill me.
Gilliman smiled beneath his helmet.
You have not changed, Theonid. Fear not, I will not let pride doom me. Stand aside, but for the moment. Guard my back. If I cannot best Fulgrim alone in combat, come when I call, and we shall give him the honorless death he deserves.
My lord, said Thiel, relieved.
It will be so,
added Andros. Reluctantly, the sons of Rabute Gilliman stood away from the doors. The Primarch placed his palms flat upon their defiled metal and pushed. He expected them to creak and squeal, but they opened soundlessly, emitting a gust of foul-smelling air as they parted. Nothing but darkness was beyond, closer yet than that in the triumphal way. Gilliman entered the Heliopolis, and the gates swung closed behind him.